I'm very happy to be here. I appreciate these girls that have, my thing is I always want to give opportunities to these young women. They are our future, and just being able to get up in front of a crowd and talk and use their gifts. They are so talented. I'm just really, really excited about how God's going to use them wherever God takes them. So I really appreciate that. Well, today we are going to talk about living big and living wise. And this whole last few days, you should have been at least going to some of the things about the Ten Commandments and the law that God gave before us a long, long time ago. Every organization has rules of some sort. Every Harding definitely has their rules. Every job you ever had rules or parameters they wanted you to stay within. Every home has rules. My home had rules. So as I was preparing this lesson and putting some finishing touches on last week when my mother-in-law was in the hospital, I was sitting there and I texted my boys and I was just kind of curious, but I asked them, what are some rules you remember from your childhood? My boys range from 28 to nearly 21. And, you know, Bill does say I'm crazy about my granddaughter. Well, it's because I waited a long time to have a girl, you know. She is so much fun. So I thought this is a little humorous. This is what they remember from their childhood of our rules. One soda a day. I'm a good mom. No extra sugar. Don't say can't. That was a rule. You never say can't. You can say I'm having trouble, but you don't say can't because can't never could, right? No sharing blankets with girls. This is what they're telling me. That was one later in life that when they had girlfriends, they couldn't both be under the blanket or, you know, no sharing blankets with girls. They had to have their own blanket or Afghan. No cell phones in computers in the bedrooms. No calls or text after 9. They bantered a little bit about that. Somebody's like, no, it's 8 o'clock. No, it's 9. You know, but no calls or texts after 9. They had to protect each other. Very loyal. Be loyal to each other. No balls thrown in the house. That one was broken every single day with 4 boys. No watching Power Rangers. I giggled at that one because I'm like, no watching Power Rangers is because the kicking. If they saw the kicking, they started kicking. So no watching Power Rangers. This one made me laugh, too, because I guess I was pretty emphatic about it. But I said, one of them said, once a toy goes outside, it stays outside. In other words, you know, they take it outside, it gets dirty, and then they want to come bring it back in. So they remembered that one. Bedtime at 9. And we had a rule called the please stop rule. Please stop meant if you're tickling or wrestling, if one of them said, please stop, that meant you better stop. You know, that was the call of it. They said, please stop. You had to stop. The fun was over. Lights on, door open when you have girls and no girls in the bedroom at any time. No tattling. And then no tattoos until age 25. Which I found out 2 months ago that one of my boys broke. So... He was 24 when he got it, but he had it for 2 years before he let on he had one. So that one has been broken. So, but I'm sure if we sat here and talked today that you could all throw out rules that you either had in your home or you remembered your parents having in their home. I thought it was kind of interesting. These are the ones they remembered, you know, not the ones I thought were more important. But this is the one they would. But rules are set up to benefit everybody. To benefit everybody, to make your home less chaos, and to make our lives more orderly. And that is exactly what God did when he handed down the 10. You know, this whole week, you're going to be talking about, well, you got one more day. And I went to a couple yesterday, and we didn't talk a whole lot about it, but I wanted to really dig into the 10 as the relevancy of today. Are they still relevant? Are they not? Was that an ancient God? Or is that of God of today? 3,500 years ago is when the first set of the commandments came down to Moses. He knew what our struggles and our tendency would be even today. And he knew that it would help us navigate a life of morality and of godliness. And he knew that if we obeyed these 10, that we would have a testimony to the world that would change the kingdom. So, are they still relevant? God handed down the original so that Israel could influence the world and so that they would worship Jehovah, the one true God. Christ entered the picture in the New Testament, and we'll be looking at some of those. And he did the same thing. He wanted us to influence the world, and he wanted us to be protected from the things that he knew would cause pain and harm in our lives. I live in a neighborhood that doesn't have fences. And most of us have dogs. And most of my neighbors have invested in the invisible fence. And if you don't know what the invisible fence is, it's they buried under the ground and the dog wears a certain collar. And when it gets close to the perimeter of your yard, it kind of zaps them. Causes a little pain, but they learn not to go past that edge of the yard. Well, we don't have one of those. So my dog has zero parameters, and probably I have some neighbors in here, and they probably can tell you she thinks she can go anywhere, even into those dogs that have parameters, and she doesn't get zapped. And I tell you that because our commandments, the Ten Commandments, are kind of like a fence of our life that God has said, don't go too far over there. Don't get close to that line that I have drawn for you. Because if you do, you might get zapped. There might be some pain involved in the decision you make. The parameters of our life are the Ten Commandments, are the rules found in the Book of Life. That is the parameters. Are they still relevant? Yes, they are. So the ten were actually given in a really dramatic way. I don't know if you have read it this week, but, you know, we got thunder, we got lightning, we got smoke and mountains, you know, and it was like 3 months after, you know, the dramatic exodus, you know, that we remember where Moses delivered the people out of slavery through the Red Sea. And yet in that time, God had done so much to reveal himself to his people. You know, you had food dropping from the ground, you know, from the manna, the quail, water from the rock, the victory of the Amalekites, the sweet water provided. And yet, they're still grumbling. They're still complaining. So God tells Moses to tell the Israelites, get cleaned up. Go wash your clothes. Get presentable. Don't have sex. Because in 3 days, God is going to speak, and he did that. He spoke through the thunder and the lightning. The thick clouds came out and the loud trumpets, and the people stood at the base of that mountain, the trembling mountain, when Moses and God were talking and the Ten Commandments were delivered. That is where the Ten Commandments and what we will refer to is the framework for a moral and godly life, and that's where it began. So when Christ reentered the commands in the New Testament, he wanted to protect us, and he wanted us to live lives that would influence the world. So let's talk about the original ten. Got them up there. Okay, we're going to go one by one, and I'm going to actually read a New Testament verse that has the very same thing. So we think the God of the Old Testament has changed his mind, but he hasn't. It's the same God of the New Testament. No other gods, only God. Matthew 4:10, this is the message. Worship the Lord your God and only him. Serve him with absolutely single-heartedness. I look at this one and I'm like, we're not doing so good with this one. He wants exclusiveness in our hearts. We have oftentimes divided hearts. We worship ourselves. We worship money, we worship sex, we worship possessions, success. Those are all false gods in our lives. It's easy to recognize some of the false god in other people's lives. You can kind of look at them and see. But so many times we can't see the ones we've actually set up in our lives. So God has asked us for us to give him exclusiveness, the one and only, the most important. Command 2, no idols. This is Colossians 3:5, also out of the message. And that means killing off everything connected with that way of death, sexual promiscuity, impurity, lust, doing whatever you feel like doing whenever you feel like it, and grabbing whatever attracts your fancy. That's a life shaped by things and feelings instead of God. What is an idol? An idol is anything or anyone who is a substitute for God. Let me say that again. An idol is anything or anyone who is a substitute for God. God wants devotion. He wants our time. He wants our energy. In the Old Testament, in the book of Judges, God tells Gideon to tear down and destroy the Asher pole. We look at it and we go, of course he did. Who would worship a pole? And then we have King Nebuchadnezzar, who worshiped the golden Baal. And we think, well, that is just ridiculous. Of course. But we do the same thing. We may not have a golden image. We may not have a pole. But we worship and we hold things in higher importance than God. Watch out. I'm gonna step on some toes here. I can look out here and see all the phones. That is become an idol in our life. We spend more time on that phone, looking at everybody else's social media, we spend so much time touching that phone. It is so important to us. We can't go anywhere without it. We rely on it heavily. It has become an idol in so many of our lives. Video games. I know most of you girls probably don't play video games, but video games. Our children. I have to fight this. Our children, our children's achievements, our grandchildren, our homes, our family, our friends. All of these are things that can take the place of God if we allow it to. Looking to other things to receive ultimate satisfaction. And it starts replacing God in our lives. They chanted, tear it down, tear it down. But we should be doing the same thing with the things that we have in our life. Tear it down. Commandment number 3, misuse the name of God. God's name, Matthew 5:33-37. Again, you heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not swear falsely, but shall be formed to the Lord what you have sworn. But I say to you, do not take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God. Verse 37, let what you say be simply yes and no. Telling the truth is a problem today. We rationalize, we tell ourselves lies, we listen to the lies of Satan, and eventually they become our truths. We think we don't really have a problem with that. I tell the truth, but do we always tell the truth? Do we exaggerate? When I grew up, I lived in a home that was pretty strict. It was a Christian home, and do not use the Lord's name in vain. That was a big one. That means no OMG, no oh my God, or gosh, or any of the derivatives that we use today. And it is everywhere. And every time I hear it, and my 52-year-old self, I think actually I might be 53, but that my heart just drops a little when I hear my kids say it. I'm like, that was never allowed. We think that's okay, but I do think it matters to God. His name should be used with reverence, with holiness. We serve a God that deserves it. And I don't think that we should use his name ever when it's something inconsequential. It is the greatest name of all names. Jesus is Lord. And I know some of you out here are thinking, well, that's really not a big deal. It's in the 10. It's in the framework. I think sometimes we've just gotten away from it. Keep Sabbath holy and rest. I'm not going to spend too much time on this because I plan to go to the next session to hear all about keeping the Sabbath with Allie Davis. Keeping the Sabbath. I still remember a time when Sundays, there was nothing open. Everybody went to church. There was no ball games. There was no birthday parties. And if there was a birthday party, I sure wasn't going. And now Sunday is just another day of the week. And it just breaks my heart. Church is an option. There is, and millennials, so the oldest millennials, like mid-30s, And we're going down to probably 22, 21, some in there. That's the edge of the millennial age. 28%. Only 28% attend church anymore. It's an option. We have to keep the Sabbath. And the Sabbath's not just about church. The Sabbath is about rest. It is about reflection. It's about regeneration of our spirit to be connected to God and His people. Because we have a battle going on every day. And God knew we needed it. Commandment 5, honor your father and mother. For God commanded, honor your father and mother, and whoever reviles, and I'm going to say reviles means to berate, to criticize, to denounce, or to abuse, your father and mother will surely die. As children, we honored by obeying. If we didn't obey, we got spanked, right? As a teenager, we honor by respecting. Even though we could see some flaws in our parents, we still honored. As an adult, we accept and forgive them for their faults. And we listen to them. Proverbs 13:1. Honor your father and mother is the commandment that comes with a promise that you will have a long life. Commandment number 6, no murder. Matthew 5:21-22. You have heard it said of those of old, you shall not murder, and whoever murders will be liable to judgment. But I say to you, whoever is angry with his brother will be liable to judgment. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council, and whoever says you fool will be liable to the hell of fire. No murder. I think most of the people in this room can say you probably haven't murdered anybody. But, you know, abortion's murder. We don't want to talk about that very much. And our anger is a real thing. It gets in the crevices of our hearts, and that grows bitterness. Jesus knew the damage of unbridled anger. He knew how far it would go, and he knew it would just make havoc in our hearts. Unrighteous anger is a step closer to murder, and God said, I don't want it. Get control of it. Do whatever it takes. Anger is a matter of the heart. Anger, jealousy, envy, malice. 4 times in Scripture, from the overflow of my heart, my mouth speaks. God knew that what was in our heart would come out. And we are to be His ambassadors. And the world is watching us. If we can't keep the 10, then what hope does the world have? Number 7, do not commit adultery. You have heard it said, you should not commit adultery. But I say to you that everyone who looks at a woman or a man with lustful intent has already committed adultery in their heart. If the right eye causes you to sin, tear it out, throw it away. For it is better that you lose one of your members than your whole body to be thrown in hell. So in the Old Testament, do not commit adultery. Don't sleep with another man's wife. Don't sleep with another man's husband. In the New Testament, don't even look at someone lustfully. I want to go a little further in that I want to cover sexual perversions or sex in general. Not just cheating, but sleeping with someone that you're not married to. Fornication. We don't hear that word very much. God says it's wrong. Did you know that there are some, I'm sure a lot of you have heard of the Ashley Madison website, and that came out a few years ago that those lists were released, and we found people that we knew and loved on those lists. That is a married people hookup site, and their logo is life is short, have an affair. That is their logo. Well, this one will even, it goes even further. There's a website for Christian swingers. How you like that one? And their logo is a dating site for faithful people. And these are people that call themselves Christians. So how are we impacting the world when we can't keep the 10? Jesus increases the requirement of the law in the New Testament because he knew that lust and sexual perversion would lead down to a path of destruction and death. Sexting, porn, emotional affairs, hooking up, or I've heard this one a few times, well, I'm engaged, so I'm going to be having sex with him anyway. Or this one, well, we need to see if we're sexually compatible before we get married. We can rationalize any of our sin, but it is sin. And in doing that, we break this commandment. Number 8, do not steal. Matthew 19, 18 and 19. Talking to the rich man, Jesus replied, do not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony. Honor your father and mother and honor and love your neighbor as yourself. Do not steal. Having integrity when no one's looking. Being honest. Don't take something that doesn't belong to you. Don't be greedy. Some of you, a lot of you in here may be bosses, maybe running business. Having integrity impacts the world, the culture we live in today. Being a good steward. Don't rob God. Don't rob others. Commandment number 9, do not bear false testimony. Do not lie. Mark 10, 18. Jesus replied, you shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. He repeats himself, doesn't he? Because they're important. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony. Honor your father and mother and love your neighbor as yourself. This is not just lying. It's deceiving. It's manipulating. Truth-telling. Revelations 21, 8. I could ask my child that's in here right now what Revelations 21, 8 says. Carson? He's afraid to say it. It's okay to say it in here. He just said it. He's afraid to say it in a bad word. Liars go to hell. And that's exactly what the Word of God says. The last commandment is not the least commandment by any means, and I think it's one that all of us need to really do a self-reflection on. Do not covet. Girls, I'm going to put it a different way for your younger generation. Do not compare. Luke 12, 15, protect yourself against the least bit of greed. Life is not defined by what you have, even when you have a lot. I believe that this is becoming increasingly difficult because we know more than ever what everyone's up to. We can get on our social media, we can see what somebody's had for dinner. We can see where they are on vacation, what new outfit they had, who they've been hanging out with. All the information is coming in at us so we can see it. So how do we feel about that when we see that? What does it do to our hearts? I think social media, personally, and I'm on it, is bringing all our personal narcissisms. We are becoming narcissistic because we are consumed with what we have or what someone else has. We are struggling to be content. I think social media has blown up this commandment and we're struggling. I think females, majority of you are females, so I'm gonna say, we're bad at this. We compare our clothes, our skin, our hair, our thighs, our social networks, our families, our children, our husbands, our boyfriends. It's endless. It is endless. This past Sunday, I did something that I have never done before in a church service. We were talking about we are really good at throwing a good funeral, but really bad at celebrating people's successes. What if instead of coveting, comparing, we celebrated what other people got? So this past Sunday, we had a praise party in our college class. And we had students stand up and tell how God had blessed them this week. What's something good that happened? And we had our party blowers and our kazoos and our whistles. And we celebrated what God had done in their life. What if we could impact our hearts by when we pull up our social media apps and we saw, woohoo! It looks like Laura had a steak dinner tonight. That's awesome! It looks like they went to Hawaii. I've never been to Hawaii. I want to go to Hawaii, but that's awesome. What if we celebrated? This could change our heart. This little party blower could change your hearts. My boys used to laugh when I watched American Idol and someone would go through that was like, had a really sad story, and I would always say, good for you, good for you. What if we did that more often? Good for you. And quit coveting what God has given somebody else. It is affecting our hearts. Okay, moving on out of these. So the New Testament commands, he took all those commands and he made it simpler for us, didn't he? He said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and greatest command, and the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the laws and the prophets hang on this. All 10 of the ones I just went through, all 10 are covered with these commands in the New Testament. If you love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, and mind, then you won't have any other gods. You won't have idols. You won't misuse God's name, and you'll keep the Sabbath. If you love your neighbor as yourself, you'll honor your parents. You won't steal. You won't lie. You won't gossip. You won't deceive. You won't slander. And if you love your neighbor as yourself, then you'll go beyond. Not just you won't murder someone, but you'll keep your anger in check. You won't commit sexual sin, and you will not covet, because you're going to celebrate them. Thought this is super interesting. Check this out. Find your generation. This generation goes from the silent generation to the millennials. On this graph, it shows the silent generation believes 100% you shall not commit a murder. But down to the millennials, there's a few that think you should. It's okay. The ones that got my attention, though, were actually the last four. Idolatry, one God, misuse of the Lord's name, and keeping the Sabbath. You can tell every generation has struggled with that a little bit. But this later generation is definitely struggling. According to this poll, many millennials have embraced there are no absolute truths. A good parent has rules, and God is the ultimate parent, and he has provided life-giving rules. His commands are our foundation that lead us to life. God knew we would need pretty specific boundaries, and he set them up, not just in the Old Testament, but in the New Testament. So, did God update his Old Testament commands? He definitely enhanced them and made them actually stricter. We live in a world with a culture that has a philosophy, if it feels good, do it. There will be no consequences. But we know as Christians that's not true. So what can we do? We have to have an action. What can we do to fix this? What can we do? Well, I think we have to set goals, and we need to work on our core. Some of the girls that have been in my Bible study the last few years know that is my thing, that our spiritual core needs a workout. We spend so much time and money getting fit and exercising, but our spiritual core is the most important. We need to be in the Word of God. We need to memorize Scripture. We need to spend time in prayer. We need to get stronger so that we can set goals and do big things for God. In Matthew chapter 25, there is a parable that we don't talk about very often. And it's the parable of the 10 virgins. And I'm going to read it. It's not very long. Verse 1, at the time the kingdom of heaven will look like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. The foolish ones took their lamps but did not take any oil with them. The wise, however, took oil in jars along with the lamps. The bridegroom was a long time in coming, and they all became drowsy and fell asleep. At midnight the cry rang out, here's the bridegroom, come out to meet him. Then all the virgins woke up, trimmed their lamps. The foolish one said to the wise, give us some of your oil. Our oil lamps are going out. No, they replied, there may not be enough for both of us and you. Instead, go to those who sell oil and buy some for yourself. But while they were on their way to buy the oil, the bridegroom arrived. The virgins who were ready went in with him to the wedding banquet, and the door was shut. Later, the other ones came, "Sir, sir, open the door for us." But he said, "I tell you the truth, I don't know you. Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know the day or the hour." I tell this story for two things. One is, we have to get prepared. We have to get ready. We need to look at ourselves. Look at our lives. Are we keeping the foundational truths that God has set as guidelines, the fence, the invisible fence around our lives? Are we keeping that? Are we impacting the culture and the world around us because of the choices we make? The world will tell us that living big is about stuff. It's about our 401ks. It's about our accomplishments, bank accounts, vacations, achievements, jobs, wardrobe. When students graduate, I'll always tell them when I have to say goodbye, which is extremely painful when you've invested in them, for them to go. And I say, go live big for God. And what I mean by that is, use whatever time God's given you, whatever amount of money you have, your relationships, your talent, your influence. Do anything you can to accentuate Jesus Christ, to make disciples, to serve, to lead, to follow, and to worship. That's what living big is. None of the rest matters. When I was a little girl, I wanted to grow up and be a mommy. I was thinking about, after listening to Cheryl a few minutes ago, I wanted to be a mommy and a first grade teacher. I wanted to be a first grade teacher since I was in first grade. And I guess I wanted to be a wife because I wanted to have babies. And that was pretty much my goal. I didn't want to be a CEO or CFO or RN or CPA or MD. I really just wanted to be a first grade teacher, and I wanted to have children. And I did that. And it sounds really simplistic or boring. I think, should I have set a loftier goal? Would that have been better? But I don't think so. I don't think so. It's not wrong if you want all of those things. As long as you choose to follow God every step and you go to him for every decision, not to leave him out of your choices and your decisions, but to go to him first and talk to him about it and wait for an answer and allow him to navigate your journey. I think that's a big problem, is making decisions and allowing God to help navigate the journey. Guys, I'm sorry, I kind of got behind. Oops, not quite there yet. Significant choices can shape the direction and course of our lives. One of the greatest challenges in life is making decisions. We have a lot of anxiety. Lots of anxiety of people that are having really hard times making decisions. We have so many choices. I heard lots of students that leave here, they'll go, this adulting thing wasn't what it was cracked up to be. And I'm like, yeah, I know. It's hard stuff, isn't it? Adulting is hard stuff. But you have to make decisions. And some decisions are trivial, and some are righteous. And when I say some are righteous, they're going to put you down a path that's either right or wrong. And you have to seek God for that answer. Research has shown that decision-making is increasingly causing much anxiety in our young people. We have more choices than ever before, and decision-making is getting more difficult. So I'm going to give you five simple, these are Debbie's little suggestions I'm making. Wise decisions so you can live a big life. One, talk to God about it. Prayer. Go to the Lord about it. He cares. He cares about every single thing. Seek God's word for your answer and pause to hear what he has to say. Don't just pray about it and then act, because you need to pause and see where God's leading you. Seek wise counsel. Wise counsel is not Google. Wise counsel is someone that is older and wiser and has walked the path ahead of you and can give you some direction and some options. Listen for God's leading and then step out confidently. To live big, we must live wise. We have to follow God's commands, all 10 of them. They are the framework for a godly moral life. We need to seek wisdom. Seek wisdom in the relationships we have, in our decision making, and seek God's plan for life. We often say we have a plan A and a plan B, but really the best plan is God's plan. And sometimes plan A falls apart because God didn't want that plan for you. God's yes is the best yes. This past month, a lot in this room know that we lost someone very dear to our family. And I don't like to read things, but I'm going to read this because I was kind of going over it earlier. And I got emotional about it, thinking I'd gotten all my emotions in check. This is Botham Sean John. And Botham was our intern. He was a Harding student. He graduated in 2016. And we loved him. And we still love him. Botham had so much potential. And Botham did so much while he was at Harding. And he was serving God and he loved him. Botham was from St. Lucia. And if you have ever been to St. Lucia, you probably are thinking, ooh, those beautiful resorts. St. Lucia is very, very poor. The only beauty on that island, besides the people, is behind walls that you cannot get to in those resorts. It's very poor. When we met Beth and we started taking trips there to help a church plant that they had started. We fell in love with his family and with his island. On September 6th, Botham was in his apartment. He worked for PricewaterhouseCooper. He had graduated 2 years ago. And he had a very good job. And on September 6th, he was home in his apartment. And an off-duty police officer went into the wrong apartment. Thinking it was hers, he was sitting on the couch watching a football game with his laptop in his lap. She shot him twice and killed him. He had plans to make some money, to get married, to move back to St. Lucia and change the island. He was going to be the prime minister of St. Lucia. He was going to help the poor people. After Botham died, I got a lot of texts, a lot of phone calls while we were in Dallas with his family, and I kept describing it as a senseless tragedy. How could this happen? What a tragedy. And the crime should have never happened. But it wasn't senseless. As painful as it's been for us, Botham's life has mattered. In his life, it mattered. In his death, it has mattered. His agenda was not fully accomplished the way he wanted it to, but God's plan is always the best plan. So, since his death, two scholarships have been set up in his name, and an enormous amount of money has been put in those scholarships. For as long as Harding's around, somebody from the Caribbean islands will be able to attend Harding that would never be able to attend. There's an accounting scholarship that's also been set up in his name. More importantly, his maternal grandfather, who had no use for God, has started a Bible study. And he is learning what Botham's life was all about. PricewaterhouseCooper, a company of 55,000 employees, has changed their company logo to hashtag Be Like Bo. God has done so much in Botham's death. His life matters. It wasn't senseless. It wasn't the way we wanted it to be. But just months before Botham finished his earthly journey, he and his friend Alexis went on a road trip to Nashville. Botham was actually going to marry his friends that were getting married, and they had a long drive from Dallas to Nashville, and they started talking about what success is. And she texted this to me. These are his exact words. They could never come to a conclusion. They were in their mid-20s. It's about making money, keeping up with the Joneses. And they were discussing back and forth what success was. A week or so later, both of them text Alexis this message. "I've got it, Alexis. I've defined success. Success is when you get to where you want in life. Our responsibility is to deliver a message. And that message is our purpose in life, which is service to others. We serve others through the messages we send, whether those be monetarily, emotional, physical, or whatever. You are successful when you help others, not just when you are most able to help, but at any time." Botham was 26 years old. His 27th birthday was Saturday. He had no idea that his life would end this quickly. You don't know how much time you have. Botham figured out what it was like to live bold for God. It wasn't anything to have, any possession he had, but it's because when you live an obedient life focused on God's purpose, you live big. In Matthew 7:24, we're running out of time, so I'm just going to paraphrase it. We all know the story of the wise and foolish builder. And about the foundation that you build your house on. We sang that song as kids, building that house on the rock. And those that built it on the sand were foolish. So in closing, I want to remind you of another parable, of that parable, where he tells you to build your foundation on the rock. And the rock is Jesus Christ. He lovingly left the compass right here, so you can navigate life. This is your compass. Keep your commands and you will be wise. Keep his commands and you'll be influential. Keep his commands and you will do big things for the kingdom. Keep his commands and you will see the face of God for eternity.